Good morning. 6:27 a.m., May 30th, 2012. It's a beautiful morning, cool, 50 degrees, dry, here on the Front Range of Colorado, here on the high plains east of the Front Range of the Rockies. It's a beautiful day. I'm home. I'm back. Yesterday was a travel day. And it pretty much took most of the day. I had visions that perhaps because I got up and got moving, was on a plane at 6 a.m., that what would happen is that I would get back to Colorado before noon. And I should have been back around 10:30 in the morning, which would have been very good because it would have given me half a day, most of the afternoon to kind of settle and plot and plan and start some of the things in motion that I had intended for this week. Unfortunately, we got delayed by over an hour and a half on our first leg of the flight, which meant, of course, that I missed my connection. And I made a couple of serious mistakes in Chicago. At first, I was listening to the United representative who was waiting for us at the gate, who said, just go over to customer service and they will help you rebook your flight. And I started to go to customer service and there was a line that was at least 2 hours long. I mean, it was longer than the security line. And there were like four people at the front and they were a lot of people were pretty upset. I'm not quite sure why, but they were pretty upset. So I did the next best thing, which was I looked on the departure board and saw that there was, in fact, a flight to Denver boarding in the next concourse. So I went over to B and went to the gate. And, first I went to my gate to see if perhaps my flight was late leaving. And, of course, it was already gone. But there was nobody behind the counter. So I went to the gate next door and said, I missed my connection. I'm trying to find out where I'm supposed to be next. And she says, right here. And I said, what do you mean right here? She says, the flight to Seattle hasn't arrived yet. I said, no, I'm not going to Seattle. I was over at C-15, and there's nobody there, so I came over here to find out what I'm supposed to do. And she says, well, you just wait here, and we'll take you to Seattle when the plane arrives. I said, no, I'm not going to Seattle. I'm going to Denver. And she looks at my boarding pass, and she looks at me, I don't know where Denver is. You'll have to go talk to customer service. It's like, okay. So I went to the departures board and found that there was, in fact, a plane boarding if I went over to B3. So I hustled my butt over to B3 and went to the gate where they were boarding standby passengers. And the clerk behind the counter said, yeah, I can't do anything for you until I get this flight out of here. I said, well, you're boarding standby passengers now, and I just missed a connection because my inbound flight was late. And if you've got open seats, seems like one of them might be mine. And he said, I can't help you. You have to go down to customer service. It's right across from gate 8, which is like, yeah, I just walked past it. There was a mile-long line. And he wouldn't talk to me. He just announced the next standby passenger. And it's like, okay. All right, customer service. Not so much. The little pre-flight video that they show you sort of says they've got a mismatch in their message, because what they're telling customers they value, what they actually do to demonstrate that value is somewhat mismatched. Which, that idea between what you say and what you do is probably going to show up someplace later. So I go down and I wait in line. Well, halfway through, and it occurs to me something the pilot on the plane said. He said, if you've got a reservation, you've got a connection, he says, don't worry. United will book you on the next available flight. So just check with customer service, and they'll take care of you. Or just go to the nearest kiosk, and they should be able to take care of you. So it occurred to me that I had the United app on my phone, so I pulled it up, and sure enough, I'm booked on the next flight. And the only thing it didn't have was a way for me to get the mobile boarding pass for the updated leg of the journey, which is like, really? I wonder how that worked. Because they didn't notify me that I had already been rebooked. I really didn't need to be standing in that line. All I needed to do was find an empty, one of those automatic check-in places, and I could have reprinted my boarding pass and been out of there. But the reality was, in the customer service area, there were no places where I could get access to a terminal. So it's like, for crying out loud, what the hell? So anyway, so I waited in line, and I got up to the front of the line, and in the meantime, I had written down the new flight information on the front of the boarding pass for the one that I'd missed. And I got up to the guy, and I said, "Hi, I missed my connection. I've been rebooked. I just need a new boarding pass." And it took like 4 minutes because he kept trying to help the woman next to him who was trying to rebook two passengers traveling together onto separate standby records, and the terminal wasn't working, and she was getting frustrated, and he was trying to help her, and there were supervisors walking back and forth behind, but nobody seemed to be helping the woman who was having the trouble, which meant that the guy who was actually serving the customers had to divert his attention from my record to help her do hers. It was like, wow, there's a significant breakdown here in all kinds of different ways. So it's interesting to watch. It really was. The offshoot was that I did get a new boarding pass. I did get on a flight at noon. I missed the 10 o'clock flight. It might have been full. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I got back. I got on a plane. I got back. And I was going to write during that time period. And I thought, this is cool. Because at this point, it's like, I want to say it's like 9:45. Might be like 9:30 Central Time. So it's 10:30 Eastern Time. And the problem was, apparently I forgot to shut my netbook off after the writing challenge. And so, of course, the battery drained. Because shutting the lid on my netbook doesn't put the power into hibernation or anything, and I never, you know, I looked at it when I went to get on the plane and saw that the screen was dark and didn't realize it was dark because it was dead. And apparently never actually even plug it back in the hotel room, which is my normal pattern, to go back to the room and plug it in so it can be charging when the next time comes that I want it. But apparently I neglected to do that in all the excitement of Balticon. So I did get back, rolled in, had my luggage, got the car. I was home around 4:30. Had to stop at the grocery store and pick up a birthday cake for my daughter. We got her the cake is a lie. Instead of happy birthday or anything else like that, we got a cake that said the cake is a lie. And I thought she was going to wet herself. She was so amused. So that was fun. But the result was that last night was sort of like I think around 8:30 here, which would have been 10:30 Eastern time, which is where my body still was. I said, you know what? I've had enough. I'm going to bed. You people need to cope because I can't anymore. I've been up since 1 a.m. local time and I need to move. So that was cool. But I'm home. I'm still groggy as hell. I have to take the car into the shop this morning. 7 o'clock, I've got an appointment. When I got in the car and started driving away, I realized that the brakes were not just a little mushy. They were really mushy. The brake goes almost to the floor before they start to bite. And I can pump them up manually. So I wasn't feeling like I was risking my life. This is not something that I want to continue. So I made an appointment with the car dealer to take it in first thing this morning. I need to get it over there around 7. So I'm going to get another 2-mile walk in this morning. That's okay. I can use the exercise. After all of the food and associated beverage that I went through at Balticon. It was, I can use the extra moving. One of the things that did happen was that at some point during the week, I got a little sharp toenail dug into the side of my toe, to the toe next to it. And with the boots on, which are very, very snug by design to keep feet protected and together and working, I managed to chafe a hole, a bloody hole in the side of my toe, which meant walking was more than a little bit painful. It was really quite a lot painful, to say nothing of getting a mess in my foot and my shoe. So it's taped up this morning. It's doing very well, but it feels kind of funny to have my toes taped together like that with the Band-Aid wrapped around them. Good morning. Ooh, big fun. Dog walkers. Right, they've got a conflagration of dogs back there. I'm going to keep walking. So yeah, that was pretty cool. Let's see, what else? I don't think there's anything. Let me think. There's lots of stuff that happened, and I can't even begin to recap it all. But the panels, it became abundantly clear to me that the people who are engaged in the writing community really don't have a really good grasp of what the social media community means. And many people in the social media community are still sort of struggling with a lot of those same mindsets. And I have to be careful here, because I'm not begrudging people the opportunity to try to pursue their dream. I'm very concerned that some people might be pursuing something that doesn't really exist. The will-o'-the-wisp syndrome, where they're following the flickering foxfire into the swamp, and they'll never be seen or heard from again. So I don't mean to make this sound like I have all the answers, because heaven knows I certainly don't. But part of the reality is that there are a lot of people out there who could be doing... Now this is a problem, because I was about to say they could be doing better, but the truth is they probably, if that's not what they want, then better is a judgment value that I'm applying because of the things that I value. Like, I value two things. I value increasing my audience, and I value making money. Now, that's over and above the fact that I value telling good stories, because I think good stories is actually, that's a given. It's not a goal. That's a given. It's like, I want to tell good stories, but I can tell good stories and nobody can ever might ever see them, and that would be one set of goals. It's like, I only want to tell good stories and I want to keep them to myself, would be sort of like the goal. And so the challenge there is, how do you know if they're good stories? Well, for me, the good stories, if people hear them, read them, like them, buy them, whatever. So this issue of what's your goal? And I had a long talk with Alec White. Is it Alec or Alex? I think it's Alex White. The Gearheart. TheGearheart.com ding. The Gearheart is a really cool story, and Alex and I have gone around about the writing style that's in The Gearheart. And The Gearheart has a really overblown, profusely purple style of writing. Now, the problem with that is that he didn't do it on purpose. It was one of those things that occurred to him, that he needed to make his environment rich, so he did it by adding adjectives. And I had a long talk with him, 2-3 years ago even now, and I loved The Gearheart after I got into it. Once I got beyond it. It's a charming story. And I've said this to him over and over again. And it's like, I've promoted it. I love the story. But the problem with it is it's this language gets in the way of the story. And we went back and forth with him. And I it's like I have to grant him his right to tell the story in the way he wants. And I fully support him in that decision. But I did want to share with him that feedback because as a reader, I found it distressing to get through because of the excess to me, which was excess verbiage. Now, there are a lot of people who love it just the way it is, and I don't have anything wrong with it. It is, in fact, a really good story. So, he was with my reading with me the other morning, and he read something from his new book, which is a prequel to the Gearheart, which is the origin story for where the secret society came from, and where Isabel came from, how she got her Gearheart. And it was gone. All of the excess purpleness from his story was gone. And he sucked me in from the very first word and kept me hanging all the way through his reading. It was brilliant. Now, I say that by way of preface to talk about what happened the night before. We were in a panel, and it was a late night panel, and we were all giddy. And I'd been told that he wasn't going to do anything with any of his properties because he was really going for the gold ring. He wanted to get a big mainstream publishing contract and a whole piece of work because he wanted that validation. And no matter how much money you make, the writers are still going to look down their noses at you even while you're cashing the check and they're off to work in the morning. So he said he really wanted to go for the big deal, the movie. He wants to be the next J.K. Rowling. And I tried to talk to him about that, about the probability of it, and the probability, for example, that he might be an NBA forward. And the probability of that is zero because he's just physically not capable. He hasn't had the background. He doesn't have the experience. He doesn't have what it takes to be an NBA forward. And it occurred to me that that was an invalid analogy. It's one that we use all the time. But it occurred to me that that was an invalid analogy, and it did two things. One, it denied him agency by saying, you don't really know what you're doing, which is arguably the case, but not necessarily something I want to be saying to anyone. And the other is, his chances of becoming an NBA forward are zero, but his chances of getting the gold ring are only microscopically small. They do exist. It is possible. He's not even 40. He could conceivably do this. I mean, it's possible that he could do this. It's not particularly likely, and he's going to have to deal with having a day job and balancing all of that huge pile of rejection notices and all the rest of it along the way. But that's sort of his choice to make. And I apologize to him for my comments because I was really out of line. That's not my choice to make. That's his choice to make. And he's making it, and he's making it with his eyes open. He's going into it with all of the best information that we have, and in spite of his recognition that he could be a very popular, he could be a very well-respected author, the reality is what he wants is to be J.K. Rowling. Okay. And I had to apologize because that's his call. I have to respect his right to make it. I'll share with him my opinion on it. But then I will back off and say, dude, good luck, really. And then when he read this little piece, this little snippet from his latest work, and I realized how much he'd grown as an author, how much he'd grown as a writer, how much his storytelling had improved. Not just the expression of it, but the story itself. Just that little snippet, it was like, dude. I told him afterwards, you know, you could do it, and you might. So that was my little moment of humble. I had very few of those. It was very difficult to be humble in a bunch of people who are always saying wonderful things about you. It's very hard to maintain. It's like, folks, I put my shoes on one at a time. My pants don't levitate into place. I have a cut on the side of my toe. I really need to brush my teeth. But it was interesting. It was a lot of fun. So that's the first of the post-Balticon lessons. I've made it around. I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day. And I'm pretty sure I'll talk to you then.